So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I know that Sean was a man who, he went to jail for a month for sleeping back in May of 96, and then he went to jail for 7.5 months on bogus drug charges, both here and in Alameda or Contra Costa County. Mm-hmm. And then they went after him on these, molesting a minor or selling drugs to a minor charges, which,
never found any drugs. Never, there was never, in fact, the girls that are allegedly the victims have told him that the officers put all these words in their mouth and that they never...
Yeah, they called him up repeatedly later and paged him trying to apologize and explain.
Absolutely.
Court had barred him from talking to any of these people, so...
And
it's hard to believe that this isn't a consequence of his refusing to budge on his sense that poor, hungry people have to be fed.
That's right.
And that doesn't mean off in the bushes at the River Street Shelter or, out at the town clock, but in right downtown where people cluster and have a right to cluster who are poor.
That's right. He never backed down from the good fight, like I said. What can I say? I mean, when you say he spent 30 days in jail for sleeping, that's one day at a time he did this, it's not just as if he went into jail and spent 30 days. I mean, this represented, so much more than just 30 days in jail. This was a commitment. I mean, he'd get out of jail and go right back to the city hall and sleep again. Which was one of the reasons why the city ended up getting their barbaric injunction against that.
One act of sleeping became a 6-month crime instead of a $162 crime.
That's right.
It's interesting. Sean was talking to me about doing another series of protests about this. He had done so much already, and he was in so many other projects that I didn't really rise to the bait. But I. With this new city council that we have, that supposedly 4 votes say that they want to change the sleeping ban or eliminate the sleeping ban, and we really are in a difficult situation because not only if the rains hit and then the armory is not available, and even when it is, it'll provide less than a third of the spaces necessary. We have a situation of a slasher in San Francisco running around slashing the throats of homeless people. How long are we going to wait for the city council to do something? And I guess my question, I have to admit that I'm focusing on the issue, is what would Sean have wanted us to do in his memory? Certainly to feed people, but also to fight for some justice around this law and the other anti-homeless laws in town.
Yeah, well, again, that's something I think we have to analyze and explore what would be the most successful approach to doing this. I mean, when do the new city council folk take...
There's a city council meeting on Tuesday, but that's the old city council, presumably their last hurrah. And then on the 24th, on that Tuesday, the new council gets seated. The problem we have is that there is no time to change the laws except by emergency ordinance. There will be one council meeting in December, December 13th, and there will be no further council meetings after that. It is possible to use the existing law to use the camping permitted section to change the law. And again, it's kind of strange. It sounds like I'm giving a political speech at a funeral or something when I talk about this. But
you can't talk, Sean, without talking politics.
Yeah, even though he said I'm not political, man.
Yeah, right.
I'm not political.
Well, he wasn't political in the same sense that Sandy Loringer wasn't political. Somebody else who was willing to go to jail for convictions.
She was convicted for serving free food at the town clock and served 23 days in jail.
Right. Again, I think that maybe, with this change happening, that we ought to explore every option about trying to initiate some change rapidly, and whatever most efficient way possible. Absolutely.
Sure. We also, of course, have Happy John Dine and the year's anniversary of his killing by Officer Connor Carey coming up on November 12th.
Right.
And Dine and Sean knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
Sean is a man with a real big heart. I don't think he... I don't remember him denouncing Officer Carey. I mean, I haven't really denounced Officer Carey much. I've denounced the police department he's a part of. I've denounced the cover-up by the City Council and the Citizens Police Review Board. I've denounced the harassment that Happy John was subject to from officers over and Eveleth and others downtown, and bouncers like Ben Newman, and, you know.
As well as Sean, right.
And Sean was also, what about Sean?
Oh, harassed, given tickets for leaning against light posts and...
Oh yeah, he was actually going to face, he was facing one of those charges as well as this mass of felonies. Officer Eveleth told him, you can't put your foot on the cement lip of a planter. That's the 1.5 inch high lip that goes around some of the little scraggly pseudo trees that have been planted downtown to replace the beautiful shrubbery and the wonderful brick, red brick planters that used to be there before the earthquake, but the police department and the merchants insisted on taking out so that they could have a ramrod straight Carmel type mall situation.
Well, I'm real heartened by the election, and I think I'm really hoping that that there's going to be a change of attitude. I think as far as the police force, you know, there's just a frightening trend, and it seems to it stems from these outrageous shootings being immediately condoned and in fact praised by their superiors and their fellow officers. You know, I watched a thing on one of those outrageous cop shows the other day that was a guy in a street wielding a samurai sword, and they cordoned off the area, and the officers took almost 20 hours in finally subduing this man, trying every nonviolent way possible. And when I compare that to, for instance, Monterey County's dealing with someone with a corkscrew.
On the roof, Charles Vaughn Sr., yeah.
It makes me think that there are police forces out there who understand, and ours don't. And
unfortunately, the Monterey is not one of them, and nor is the Santa Cruz police force. If you've given them what's going to be happening, for example, in the week of November 16th when the Brian Andrus trial starts again.
Yeah.
Do you want any comments about that Andrus situation?
I can't comment right now, but, you know, it's, again, just outrageous. The real criminals in that case are in fact in court testifying against the victim.
We're talking about Officers Garazio, Officer Zamanek, Officer Berry, and of course the ever-present Code Blue Sergeant Hennig.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible situation, and you know, they're wearing him down. Bit by bit, you know, he's running out of time, money, everything.
We're talking about Brian Andrus. Now,
absolutely.
I know that on the City Council agenda for Tuesday, there is a council meeting on Tuesday, there is apparently some attorney decision about the claims filed by Brian, his wife Lori, and their, what, 1.5-year-old Hannah Andrus, who was in the room when a bullet, one or two bullets ricocheted around as the police broke in without warrant, without probable cause, and...
Right.
And then shot him five times.
Right.
After he
fired at him nine times.
And he was in fact wielding a baseball bat,
right.
but that was in his own home for the most part.
Right.
And the jury in the first trial of Andrus, who was of course loaded up with felony charges, to me to distract from what the police had done. He was found. They hung on that. Admittedly,
yep.
It was 10-2 for conviction, but it was still a hung jury.
Right, and they're retrying him, and they can continue to retry him until you know, they find you know, it's outrageous. You know, he imagine the toll this has taken on him and his family, just time away from work, not being able to work, and you know, paying for attorney fees. It's a terrible, terrible thing. I mean, one baseball bat and four officers. You know, they fired in a house that was small and...
They fired in a neighborhood that had many young children nearby.
Children all around when they
and
were...
And then he was left lying face down in the mud.
Right.
With bleeding to death. And
right.
They took no medical attention other than to handcuff him.
Right, right. Exactly.
It's almost like some kind of a horror movie, you know?
Oh, it is. And his mother describes a scene at the hospital where she could see him through a... I gotta take this call. At any rate, they were awful. I've gotta take this call.
Thank you, Kate Wells.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that, of course, was attorney Catnip Kate Wells, who's been a Santa Cruz person for a decade, or no, two decades, three decades here. She was attorney for Sean Alimi, or Shit Kicker Sean, as I used to call him in the street shit sheet. He stood his ground. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert.
Ah, sounds like Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist Donna Dice.
Yes, you were talking about Sean.
Yes.
Sean was truly an exceptional person. I hope that other people will be able to follow in the spirit that he had, because he's a really fearless person. And we need more people like that, because not that it's anybody's fault, but a lot of people do tend to back down when the confrontation gets really hot and heavy. And we need people like that, because they're the ones that encourage us to carry on,
mm-hmm.
and not to just, you know, sit in the status quo, which is like sitting in the muck.
Mm-hmm. How long did you know Sean?
I've known him about 3-4 years.
Is there something particular you'd like to talk about in terms of remembering him? And
well, he's just a really sweet-hearted person. He was a controversial figure because he was out there. But it was incredible to go downtown and do Feed the People with him, because he just created this extra spiritual dimension wherever he went, where people would respond to him. He'd go down the street and say, "Hi, how you doing? Make America beautiful." And people would just, they'd be blown away by that. And use that charisma to help other people. That was his whole life. He didn't have a selfish little part for himself.
How did you first meet him, Donna?
I met him here at the Riverview Apartments. He was doing Feed the People here.
That was about the same time that you were getting one of your first retaliatory evictions. In fact, you're in the middle of fighting such an eviction now, right?
Yeah, in fact, I think the manager took some heat because she supported Feed the People, and she allowed some homeless people to sleep in her apartment, and they effectively kept her out of property management, I think, because of her compassion, basically, which is unfortunate, because we need compassion in all different occupations,
uh-huh.
to change things.
What do you think Sean would have wanted us to do if he were here with us?
Well, I think he wants us to keep taking care of other people to the best of our ability. Sure, we do have to take care of ourselves. There's a lot of people that are still having a really hard time with that. But whatever's left over, we need to share.
Yes. Well, Donna, well, we need to share something with you. I know the landlord refused your rent a couple of days ago, and I guess you haven't yet gotten the official unlawful detainer, but that can't be too far behind, right?
Right, unless the owner is contacted and backs down again.
So you've actually successfully fought this, what, 2 or 3 times now?
2 times.
And what do you think your chances are this time? How is it looking for you?
A lot better than last time, but that's because we're stronger, and that's because we have good paralegals working with us, like Paul and Eve and Chris, and Quigley's another one, designed a worldwide website for us. And you know, once you get on the web, they, you know, have the Freedom of Information Act, which gives us, you know, much broader perspective on the whole thing.
Now, the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz that you're a part of, you help tenants to fight evictions in court. You advise them of their rights. You help them get together to fight for better protection for tenants. How can people help you?
Well, they can come and volunteer, show up at our spaghetti feeds Friday night, call us up, and whatever type of talent you have, I'm sure we can give you something to do, whether it's calling people on the phone or sitting at the computer.
What, your number, of course, is, I guess, 426-0644?
Uh-huh.
That's the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, and we're talking with Donna Dice at 426-0644. Are you fighting any cases this week that you want to mention?
The last case I helped out was a young man. Well, he's about 36 years old. He's living in a very substandard place. He's lived there for 6 years. The landlord's renting out the garages, and there's no bathroom, there's no stove, no heat or water or anything. And so the guy that lives in the garage goes out every morning, pees against the fence, which is where everybody has to walk. And he's put up with this for 6 years, and he's tried to get repairs. And as soon as the landlord found out, he wrote a letter to Environmental Health. The landlord said, "That'll mean war," you know, and then proceeded to try to evict him. So we're supporting him in his case, trying to help him have a little backbone there.
Uh-huh.
Because it is difficult to accept a settlement when the landlord's always going to put in there, well, you're going to have to move, and there's no place to move. And he works at a body shop, and he's turned his life around. He used to be a gangbanger when he was young, and he's really trying to go forward with his life. And that's the kind of people we get. We don't get people that are just hanging out on welfare so much. We get a lot of working people that are really suffering. They're really trying to do the right thing, and they're getting screwed by the landlords because they basically don't care.
Hmm.
Well, obviously you do care, and I hope that more people call in to you to volunteer to help and also volunteer to educate themselves as to what's going on in the tenant scene. Your number again, and we're talking to the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, is 426-0644. Anything you want to add?
Well, the Norman Green thing is supposed to, there's supposed to be the trial on Tuesday, so supposedly the county's supposed to do some type of raid or something tomorrow. We'll believe it when we see it, but we'll be checking in on that.
So there may be a trial of Norman Green?
Yeah, on Tuesday.
And what court and what time?
I'm not sure of the court and time, sorry.
So if people are interested, give a call to the Huff line. That's 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll get that information for you. And in the meantime, we'll just we'll wait for the word from you on that, Donna.
Okay.
Anything?
Have you tried to contact Xavier?
About?
Sean.
I haven't called Xavier yet.
Oh,
Shavy. Oh, Shavy. Shavy was Sean's partner.
Yeah.
Shavy, I believe, is in Israel.
He is.
But I believe that Tony Bowl, Sean's attorney on a couple of these cases, is trying to call Shavy's mom this morning.
Okay. All right. So are we going to have a ceremony?
I certainly would hope we not only have a ceremony, but a whole series of protests lasting over the winter until there's a real change in the sleeping ban, but certainly a ceremony for him personally. I don't know, you know, where his remains are going. They're currently lodged in the Fresno morgue, and John Earth, and I guess others who knew him best, are the ones that decide that, maybe his relatives too. I think he has a father in Russia and a brother in Puerto Rico. I'm not quite sure. I've heard kind of different stories. Nothing is clear yet about that, except kind of this initial shock that he's not with us.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to all of us getting together and having some kind of spiritual significance out of this.
Well, I definitely think we should all show up at the Happy John Dine Memorial, 5:30 on Thursday. Food Not Bomb, Feed the People was, I think, going to be serving food. I think it still will, as well as Joe Schultz. We're going to be remembering Happy John. I don't see any reason why we can't add Sean to that. I think Sean and John make a very good pair.
Okay.
Hey, thank you, Donna.
Okay.
And that was Donna Dice of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop's P.O. Robert Norse. We're going to be chugging through another hour and a half of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, hopefully with some input from you. Again, 427-3772 is the number to call. There was an election victory on Tuesday for those who at least were giving lip service to the idea of changing the sleeping ban. And I've actually been able to contact one of them, Chris Crone, who has agreed to meet with me next week to talk about this issue and other issues around police misconduct and laws that criminalize poor people and whatever. So as I said, there's a Huff meeting today at 3 for those of you who want to have some input into this process. Of course, you can get input just by calling the city council. The new city council members, Chris Crone, Keith Sugar, and Tim Fitzmaurice, as well as really the kingmaker in this situation, Catherine Byers, since she's quite possibly going to be the next mayor, unless we get Rotkin, God help us, or at least she'll be the fourth vote. So I'm going to probably broadcast those numbers later in the show, but if you want the numbers of Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, you can either call me at 423-HUFF, that's my number off air for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or you can call the city clerk's office during business hours during the week. They have the phone numbers of these council members, these new council members who were elected quite overwhelmingly. 61% voted for them over the 39% who voted for Walton, Steinau, and Quartararo, the right-wing alternative, the merchant alternative, Rising Star. Steinau as her sponsor, Scott Kennedy, and who knows, perhaps Karen Gillette, who also sponsored her. She was called Rising Star. Well, we're afraid we're going to have to call her Sinking Stone Steinau henceforth. I'm not trying to be mean and nasty to Linda. Nothing against her personally. It's her politics that still rule the city, by the way. Let's make no mistake about it. The politics of discrimination against poor people, the politics of harassment for innocent life-sustaining behavior like sleeping, that's still the law in Santa Cruz. There's no change. And there's going to be no change unless we make those changes and force the city council to make the changes that are necessary. I think that still remains the truth. But I did have an interesting conversation with Beach Area Working Group activist Scott Graham after the election. Now, the Beach Area Working Group is a kind of a many-sided group. They put out some great papers and did some great speeches at City Council under the leadership of Doug Rand. And they were able to mobilize the community, along with other groups, to an awareness of the Beach Flats boondoggle, the attempted giveaway and bulldozing away of the Beach Flats area for the benefit of the Seaside Company, the Boardwalk. On the other hand, the Beach Area Working Group has so far succumbed to Doug Rand in his kind of arbitrary, sounds like it's even politically motivated, I'm not sure where it comes from, but he has decreed I am persona non grata in his group, even in public meetings of his group, without any particular reason. There was no fight, there was no disruption. He just decided that he didn't like me and he wanted to have me barred, and either I left or he would leave. And then suddenly the bar began to extend to people I knew, and I asked the Beach Area Working Group not to allow this kind of closed process to happen. And of course, from them, they were very anguished about it. They didn't like what Doug Rand was doing, but they valued his input more than mine, and they felt it was a choice between his input and my input, and therefore they figured they had to go with him. I thought that there was more than one choice in the situation, that Doug Rand is not about to abandon his own work over many a month. He's been on sabbatical from the Resource Center for Scott Kennedy, I'm sorry, the Resource Center for Nonviolence for about a year, and he's been putting a lot of good time into fighting the Beach Flats controversy, but he has also been putting some very bad time into discriminating against activists he doesn't like, and it's a sad thing. I haven't talked about this at length on the air, but it needs to be mentioned. I kept my mouth shut during the election fight in order not to prejudice the beach area, the boardwalk issue, because I think that the really important thing was to make sure that this lunatic redevelopment scheme, this attempt to fatten the wallet and the belly of Charlie Canfield's company, it had to be defeated, and I kept a low profile on that issue, perhaps too low a profile, because I think internal democratic process in so-called progressive groups is really a vital thing. and I'm going to insist on it when this issue arises again. In the next area of this group, next meeting of this group that I go to, I will demand that they respect the rights of everyone in the group who comes. And whether Skip Spitzer likes it or not, Skip is a good activist. We've been talking about it on the net endlessly, and he just doesn't see it as that important an issue. He sees it as a form of egotism on my part. I don't think so. I think when a group tends to discriminate because one person who heads the group believes suddenly that radicals, I don't even think I'm that radical, but people he regards as radical, like myself, prejudice their group by being there, then we get to a kind of a McCarthyite kind of situation, a blacklisting situation, and that has to be stopped before it starts. So I'm making this a sort of public statement at this time because I think the news has to come out. It shouldn't be kept under wraps. On the other hand, there are other important things happening. I'm not going to spend all my time talking about this or much of my time dealing with it. I think Doug Rand has done a lot of good things in the last year for us, and will continue to do a lot of good things. He's just got some very bad judgment on this one issue, and I hope that that judgment changes, and I hope that those who are in the group with him, good people like Fred Geiger and Susan Martinez and Phil Baer, can prevail on him to either change his mind or else stand up to him and say, look, we have to be democratic in our processes, or we cannot claim to represent open process and democracy at City Hall, which is what we supposedly want. So that's the story with the Beach Area Working Group. And one of the most articulate and kind of most rough-hewn members of the Beach Area Working Group is a man named Scott Graham, also known as Neptune, for those of you who know him by that name. He's a very savvy, well-educated and knowledgeable individual on a lot of issues that I have yet to educate myself on. I cornered him at the Fitzmaurice Crone Sugar Victory Party and interviewed him, and I'm now going to play you that interview. I think you'll find this interesting.
Anybody know what time it is?
It's about 10 o'clock.
But before we do that, and we will be hearing from Scott Graham in a moment, the next few moments you're going to be hearing are those of a confrontation that happened earlier in the evening, on election evening. Video journalist Becky Johnson and I were driving by New Leaf Market when we happened upon officers Headley and Bayani with a double-parked squad car stopping a man, actually two men, and ticketing them in the street. They actually were sitting on the sidewalk near the New Leaf Market, a closed New Leaf Market, and they were getting tickets for sitting near a shop. Not for blocking the sidewalk, as these two officers had ticketed many people for in the previous week, because they claimed that the hacky sackers were blocking the sidewalk. Not for defecating, urinating, or sleeping. Not for displaying merchandise like t-shirts, which Headley had ticketed young people for from another Feed the People type group that came through town in early September. No, this was for sitting on the sidewalk. This is the subject also of a video documentary on Club Cruise that we filmed last week. I was the host of that show, and it'll be showing on Channel 71, not sure when, but you'll be able to see some parts of that actually, and talk to Mr. Kennedy, not Scott Kennedy, but this is one of the young men ticketed was named Kennedy, and you'll be able to hear his point of view. But we actually got this audio tape you can hear now about what's going on down on Pacific Avenue at 10 o'clock after most people go home. The police are still on the job going after those vicious lawbreakers. Let's listen in.
So it's somewhere between 9 and 10. We're in front of New Leaf Grocery here. And looks like another Headley bust going on. A man is being written a ticket with a backpack. Officer Bayani, what a surprise.
Played the sign from the window.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a law against
$50 ticket from Officer Headley.
Were you warned?
What's that? No.
Not warned, huh?
He didn't warn you. They're supposed to warn you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got here a couple days ago for Halloween. Wanted to try to make some change so you get back on the bus.
Hi, what's your name?
Kaylee.
Really? And you got a ticket for what, drumming?
Yeah. Explain what they're telling you.
You can file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board about this if you'd like.
Yeah.
They're open tomorrow if you're interested. So what happened? How long have you been, how long were you here before this happened?
A few months.
Yeah. And did the officers give you any warning that they were going to ticket you?
No.
You're shaking your head now?
No. Yeah, I was...
What was their complaint? What was their problem?
Give me a second. I'll take care of this quick, right? Mm-hmm. So, what I need you to do is sign in here in the red box. Okay? Mission Gills cops take care of this for 30 days. Are you excited?
So the officer's asking both these men to sign their tickets.
It'd be an interesting time to use that non-signing the ticket technique. Just ask the officer if he'll take you to a magistrate instead of... Actually, you might ask the officer if he'll take you to magistrate if you refuse to sign the ticket. You could just ask him if you refuse to sign the ticket, will he take you to the magistrate or not? You can ask him and he can give you a yes or no answer on that.
So I don't get a warning legally? I don't get a warning if I'm sitting in front? Shouldn't it be posted here or something?
No, all the municipal codes are listed at the library.
I just got into town a couple days ago. I couldn't get to the library.
Okay. That's a lot harder than that's okay. When you do a signing in the red box, it is not in the
sheet. If you don't sign it, in essence, you'll be asking him to go take you to jail, and you'll have to stay in jail overnight. Of course, if everybody starts doing this, he'll stop issuing these tickets. That's true.
Just ask him if he'll take you to a magistrate. If he says he'll take you straight to jail if you don't sign it, then you can say, well, I'll sign it, but under duress.
Okay.
Yeah, but ask him first.
Ask him first before you sign it if he'll take you to a magistrate rather than jail.
Are you taking me to jail or a magistrate?
If he refused to sign.
And then, then you can sign it and go tomorrow and rescind your signature. You can do that in court.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I sign it under duress?
Yeah. You can even say that right now.
I'm signing under duress here. You're signing your promise to appear.
He's signing under duress because he's being threatened with jail. That's what he just said.
I don't know. I don't think I did anything jail worthy, but maybe.
What's your name?
You did it.
Luke.
Luke what?
Kennedy. You signed your site. Everything's all good.
Oh, all good. Would you just rack up a $310 worth of tickets on two homeless people for playing music outside of a store that was closed and with no warning yet?
Good work, gentlemen. Keep up the good work.
Here, guys.
I'm trying to make some money to just get back.
Did they say that there was a complaint?
No.
Then you didn't hear a complaint either?
They just told us about this big crime we committed here.
Okay, you're outside of a closed store. Within, you're at least, you're at least.
People were actually giving me money. They weren't actually telling me to be quiet. They're being nice.
Get a job, you guys. Get a job. Get a job or go somewhere else.
There should be some kind of law where you have to post that you can't sit here or something.
Ignorance of the law is not a defense.
Well, he has no excuse, actually, because often they've said, well, there's a crowd here and there's a clustering.
Yeah,
looks like you guys were the only people here.
Yeah.
Were there other people here when you were here? Any?
No. I mean, there's only been people walking by, and like it's not like Halloween. I wasn't planning during Halloween because there's too many people around, but right now there's just people walking by, nobody sitting down. There wasn't even anybody sitting down in the middle of the quad here.
At the planter, there was nobody there either.
Is that the planter?
It's called the planter.
Do you want to come on my show tomorrow?
Sure.
You gonna be in town?
Yeah.
Because we're taping a show, and Robert's actually gonna be hosting it, and the topic is about harassment of people downtown.
And that was Luke Kennedy on election eve, one of two, I guess you'd say, musicians who was ticketed late at night, 10:15, next to New Leaf Market. Again, the ticket was not for unreasonable noise, not for playing an instrument. It was for sitting on the sidewalk. And it was actually an illegal ticket because the sitting on the sidewalk code does specify you have to be warned and then given an opportunity to move. So Officer Headley apparently is failing to give the warning, or at least did so on this occasion, if these men are to be believed, failed to give the warning. And given their kind of very mild demeanor, it's hard to believe that had they been warned, they wouldn't have gotten up and moved, denying Officer Headley and Officer Biani their opportunity to give out $162 tickets. The other thing that's interesting about this encounter is the discussion of take me to a magistrate, which you may have been hearing more about in my shows. I'm still not terribly clear on the effectiveness of this kind of defense, but I'm becoming more interested, and I'm going to be talking about it today at 3 o'clock down at Noah's Bagelary, hopefully with, well, we're hoping that one of the attorneys will show, but we don't know if they will or not. This is a Huff meeting that I've mentioned earlier in the show is going to be happening downtown on Pacific Avenue, because people have been getting, increasingly, these frivolous and malicious tickets from police officers, apparently intent on either showing their authority or on eliminating a certain look from Pacific Avenue, rather than meeting any genuine law enforcement concern. And one way of dealing with tickets is to ask the officer, "Officer, are you? If I ask you to take me to a magistrate and don't sign this ticket, will you take me to a magistrate or will you take me to jail instead?" And if they say, "We won't take you to a magistrate, we'll take you to jail," and then they'll let you go to court in a couple of days, then you should say, "Okay, I'm going to sign this under duress." And you sign it under duress, meaning you either can just sign your name and then later explain to the court when you go in the next day or two to have it rescinded, that your signature was a signature under duress. Then demand that the court, if they want to cite you for a crime, send specifically a complaint, an affirmative complaint from the city attorney or the district attorney for the so-called crime you're engaged in. The point of this is that it makes it more difficult for the city and the district attorney's office to do it. They actually have to claim that a real crime is being committed merely than following the whims of an officer with a citation ticket book. And it puts the city and the county on notice that this kind of frivolous behavior is going to have to stop. The people's rights are going to have to start being respected. You also have the option, I'm told, to say, just simply take me to a magistrate and decline to sign the ticket, at which point they'll take you to jail. I've never known them take anybody to a magistrate in this jurisdiction, meaning to a judge, to rule on this issue. But it has been found in court rulings in other jurisdictions to be a violation of the law for them to take you to jail instead of to a magistrate. Now, the problem I have here is I'm getting this secondhand from B.E. Smith, from Kate Wells, from Richard Quigley, people I respect, but I need to know more specifically before I recommend this as a course of action to you out there. So we're hoping to get more information, put it in flyer form, and indeed Luke Kennedy is, I believe, going to go and try to rescind his signature. He signed this ticket given him by Officer Headley or Biani on Tuesday, and he will be going down to on Monday to rescind his signature and kind of carry on this process further, and I'll be letting the radio audience, letting all of you know how this goes and how well it works. And I promised you here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3, which is what you're tuned to, I promised you an interview with Scott Graham, or Neptune, kind of the one of the savvy half streetwise, half sweetwise activists with the Beach Area Working Group, and has been kind of key in this whole election business for the last few months, which gave us the new city council of Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and Byers, presumably, in the majority. Let's talk to Graham and see what he says about things.
The lineup is Fitzmaurice 16.4%, Crone 50.3%, Sugar 18%, Steinau 15.3%, Walton 13.4%, Quattro 14.2%, Clark 4.2%. And here we are at SEIU headquarters. Can you dig it? Okay, well, so I guess we're coming in somewhere around 11 o'clock at SEIU HQ, where the three progressive candidates, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, are coming in for a victory. It looks like it might be a significant victory. And everybody here is pretty happy. You're happy?
Yeah.
We're talking to Scott Graham, who's that long-haired, somewhat rough-chinned radical of the Bay Area Beach Area Working Group, and who's been, well, for months, you've been pursuing the trying to get the truth out about the Canfield Company giveaway, as I put it.
Right.
What's the story? These three guys have won. They, of course, have been adamant opponents of the Beach Flat settlement, as even the compromise. I know Keith Sugar didn't like it. I know you and I didn't like it. That was the compromise at City Council on October 7th. Particularly vicious was, of course, the Tidelands giveaway, and you've been covering that. That was the situation where City Council gave away by a 5-2 vote the, most of the 6 acres, traded it for 1.2 acres or something, 1.5 acres. What was the story on that?
Well, one of the big problems with what they voted on was that there was no clear explanation of what they were giving away. They were getting 1.2 acres, but it didn't say what they were giving away. It didn't say whether they were giving away the 6-acre parking lot or all of the Tidelands, which includes the area the boardwalk sits on, the beach in front of the boardwalk, which the boardwalk claims to own, and the beach in front of, all the way down to the wharf, which the boardwalk also claims to own, which in California, under California law, nobody except the people can own the beach.
Well, we would have thought that it, given that provision in California law, that you might, say a naive person looking at this settlement might say, well, it's obvious they don't own that, so they must merely be talking about this one piece of property, but I guess a critic might reply, well, none of this property is really owned by the Beach Boardwalk. It's all owned by the people of Santa Cruz, the people of the state of California, and yet for some reason, in violation of the city charter, which mandates a vote on this issue, it is being, first, I guess, being... The City Council has directed its negotiators, its attorneys, to turn this back to the state, at which point the state will give it over to Canfield. Is that the plan?
Well, it depends on what happens here in this election. Part of what's going on here is that Gray Davis, seems like he's going to become our next governor, is on the state's lands commission, which will eventually possibly turn this land over to the boardwalk. The attorney the state's land commissioner had that came to the city council meeting was very guarded in what he was willing to say in public about this case, saying because he may have to litigate it. I think part of him saying that was that, A, we would not have Dan Lundgren as attorney general, which is his boss. This attorney for the lands commission, his boss is Dan Lundgren.
Will be until... Right. Later tonight.
Right. And so if Bill Lockyer becomes the Attorney General, he may decide to fight this case. Gray Davis, as governor and former head of the Lands Commission, may decide to fight this case.
Davis, another corporate scumbag, perhaps, you know, somewhat better than, you know, Lundgren, but similarly motivated by, you know, big corporate money?
I'm not really sure where Davis stands. The only thing I know really about Davis is that he has a good working relationship with Jerry Brown, whom I respect very greatly.
I mean, I know that the one time the two were involved in the same political regime, but that was like 20 years ago. I mean, you know, at one time, Jerry Rubin was a street activist before he became a stockbroker. I mean, that's... At one time, Mike Rodkin said he was a socialist. I mean, all
before
these things.
Before he decided to take things from the people and give it to big companies.
Right, well, all for our own good, of course. So, I know that there was a consideration that this business was going to be put up for a referendum, but that would have taken, a bunch of signatures in the middle of an election campaign in a very short space of a month. So, instead, I guess... those people who feel this Tidelands giveaway has to be fought are pursuing a lawsuit?
That's what the option we're considering right now, because part of what we're doing is we're talking with some local attorneys, and we're also talking with some attorneys in San Francisco, a law firm up there that has a lot of experience in these city council type cases where the city council makes a vote they legally can't make, which happens more than most people think. I mean, city councils all over the country make votes that they can't really make, and unless they're challenged, they just keep on doing it.
Well, I know that originally back in 1933, Celia Scott mentioned, and I've heard mentioned elsewhere, I believe from you, among other people, the Swanton City Council, and Mayor Swanton was mayor, and he was also, chief owner of the boardwalk.
Well, I think he had just sold the boardwalk prior to that.
I see.
Charlie Canfield's father had just bought the boardwalk around that same time period.
But this whole quitclaim deed and the giving over of the property the entire boardwalk, not to mention the, I guess, the area. Are we talking the entire boardwalk of this particular Tidelands property? Was required a two-thirds vote of the city voters at that time, according to the 1911 charter,
right.
And that was changed in 1948 to require only a majority vote, but lo and behold, our city council doesn't even want a majority vote. They just want a majority vote of a group of seven people, three of whom are being booted off the council.
Well, that's one of the problems here, is that they were in a big rush to do this, and they claim they weren't in a big rush, but on October 6th, when they made the original vote, they were in such a big rush to do it, they forgot to have an actual document in front of them that they were voting on.
Obviously, they should have called in Hernandez, who did the compromise resolution later that evening. Actually, well, of course, for all you listeners, Hernandez, in my view, did no such thing. He was simply a cat's paw and a script reader, not a very agile one at that, for Kennedy and Rotkin.
Yeah, he actually did have some problems reading that document that night. He kept on going into his Porky Pig imitation.
Ebony.
Yeah, that's the one. But
I don't want you to sound like a pale male here, you know. I mean, try to avoid being racist in your comments.
Well, the whole thing, I'm not trying to be racist at all. I just think that, you know, it doesn't matter what a person's race, what their gender is, whether they have a physical or mental disability. It depends on what their abilities are and where they stand on the key issues facing our town, one of which is growth. Are we going to grow to a point where this place isn't livable anymore? That seems to be what the current council majority wants to do, and hopefully our candidates will continue this trend of gaining here tonight, and we'll win, and we'll have a new majority, which will be slow growth, and we'll actually try to enhance the quality of life here in town instead of being a detriment to it, as this current majority is.
Are there any, I know we've got some council meetings coming up, but we'll still have the old council, which of course has there's a city council meeting on the 10th of November, which is still old, and there'll be a 24th of November council meeting, which will be partially old and partially new. What